And Judge, yes, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Yes, ma'am, you have it. You may begin when ready.
May it please the court, my name is Jacqueline Murphy Goode, and I represent the appellant Hassan Williams. Sole assignment of error in this case is that the trial court erred in finding the evidence sufficient to convict the appellant of possession of a Schedule 1 or 2 controlled substance with intent to distribute and possession of a Schedule 1 or 2 controlled substance with intent to distribute on school property. The appellant recognizes that on a challenge to the sufficiency of the evidence on appeal, the evidence is viewed in the light most favorable to the prevailing party below, which in the instant case is the Commonwealth.
Let me see if I can kind of cut to the chase here for you. Do I understand correctly that essentially the thrust of your argument is the Commonwealth's evidence was insufficient on the issue of whether your client exercised dominion and control over the drugs that were found in the woods where he in the area where he'd been hiding?
That's one issue, Your Honor, yes.
I guess it's to the one charge.
Well, it to both charges, Judge, but I would also argue about the element of intent to distribute. I don't think that the Commonwealth had sufficient evidence on that particular element.
What about all the phone text messages on the phone and all?
Well,
and the cash that he had in his pocket.
He did have some cash in his pocket. He had given the officer a reason for having that cash in his pocket, that he had just been paid, that he, you know.
Those are questions for the trier of fact, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And regarding the extraction report, because you asked about the text messages, Judge, it actually showed that he had not sent any text messages on the morning of April 16th of 2016. He had received some text messages.
Doesn't essentially your argument, and again, I'm not casting any aspersions on your client, but I'm just trying to make the argument I think is your best argument, that there maybe enough evidence to suggest that he was a drug dealer, but there's no evidence to suggest that the drugs that were found in the context of the encounter with the police were necessarily his drugs.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Okay.
I would agree with that statement. There is some evidence to point to that, such as the text messages. There were multiple, you know, from the extraction report, text messages from months prior to that that would indicate some, you know, that may point to him being a drug dealer. There were text messages from even several days before the incident, but there were none on the date of. In fact, the cell phone, the LG cell phone, was dead. And the appellant admitted that the cell phone was dead when it was recovered. The extraction report would indicate that as well. That would be consistent with his own statement because he was receiving text messages, but he wasn't responding to those text messages. And that's found on appendix page 182. Regarding the element of possession, since this is a constructive possession case because the bag of heroin wasn't found on his person, it was found in the woods behind the elementary school where perhaps hundreds of people were that day for the football game. The officers never saw the appellant throwing anything. They never saw him disposing of anything or making any furtive movements. The officers also testified that they actually did not see him.
Well, he was hidden from their sight for a short time.
For a very short period of time, yes, Your Honor. But there was, you know, there were no witnesses to say that he was actually in the woods. The officers mentioned that they did not see him in the woods at all.
Is it reasonable to infer that people just don't usually leave, you know, cocaine or heroin or any other controlled substance just laying around, you know, I've read hundreds of cases where, you know, they've been disposed of when the police were about to catch up with you. They throw in a nearby trash can or
sure.
You know, behind an object or whatever where they eventually get recovered. Is it a reasonable inference that that's what happened here?
Perhaps, but it was a public place, Judge, and it was being frequented that day in particular. And we don't have any information that there may have been other football games or other events at that particular school where people were coming and going and it could have fallen out of someone's pocket or...
Counsel, isn't the trier of fact entitled to view all the evidence in its totality?
Yes, Your Honor.
Not just in isolation. And in this instance, you have that the defendant fled from the vehicle to an area where the drugs were found, that he had large quantities of cash in his possession, the cell phone, which had the text messages, and he made incriminating statements to the police officer.
He did, Your Honor, and I believe that the Commonwealth, in its brief, tries to distinguish a case that the appellant cited in our brief, which was Maxwell versus Commonwealth. And in so doing, the Commonwealth states, like you just mentioned, that that Mr. Williams had a large quantity of cash in his possession. In the Maxwell versus Commonwealth case, the appellant in that case also had a significant amount of money and a large amount of cash on him, $460. But that didn't seem to really distinguish between these two cases. The Commonwealth also states that Williams...
But in your case, quite frankly, something else happened which apparently made it more incriminatory, and that when he said, I got it from my employer, mm-hmm. he couldn't provide the name of the employer, which...
He couldn't, and that is suspicious, Judge, but it doesn't,
It's suspicious, but standing alone, it obviously would not be anywhere near enough for a conviction, but you have these other things that you need to deal with. And so
right.
how do you get to the point where a reasonable fact finder could not come to the conclusion that he was indeed responsible?
Well, the Commonwealth points to, again, some of those circumstances in the instant case that would be distinguishable from Maxwell. The Commonwealth states that Williams made incriminating statements to the officer. The appellant did acknowledge that he ran a red light, that he was in a rush to get to the football game. But
those particular facts don't concern me. It's not knowing if you say that this came from my employer and he can't even provide the name of the employer, as you said, that's at least suspicious, which then allows it to bleed into other things that are incriminating.
Right. It is suspicious, Judge, and to try and explain that, the appellant knew that he had three active warrants out for his arrest. It could be plausible that he didn't want to tell the officer where he was working, and that's why he sort of passed over that question.
While you have time, segue, if you could, into the circumstances regarding the distribution of drugs on school grounds. Were you trial counsel?
I was not, Your Honor.
Okay. From reading the transcript, and we've gone through it ourselves, what evidence would you suggest or that you believe the Commonwealth is going to rely on to suggest that there was an intention to distribute these drugs on school grounds?
What evidence do I think the Commonwealth is going to rely on?
Yeah, and what would you respond to?
I would probably say, Judge, that they would be relying most on the text messages themselves.
There was nothing in the text messages to suggest that any kind of contraband or distribution that might have occurred was going to occur on school grounds.
That's there? Correct.
Okay.
And that's what I would argue is there wasn't any evidence, even though there was some text messages from days before or months before that would indicate he may be coming to this particular place to do what he's done prior to, or which would be indicated that he did prior. There was
your
nothing.
Your suggestion is that there needs to be a temporal element.
Yes, Your Honor.
To the charge.
On that particular date, there wasn't anything indicating that he had intended to go to the school that day for that purpose.
So the inference would be that he was located within that school zone at the point in time that the officer came into contact with him.
Yes, Your Honor.
First came into contact with him, and that all the other indicia of potential drug activity would be the Commonwealth's position.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what would you say to that? Is it reasonable to infer that by location, with all this other evidence, that it was going to occur within the school zone?
I would say it wasn't reasonable, Your Honor, and the reason I say that is because before he fled, he had a conversation with the officer. He admitted that he was in a rush. He had violated, he had a traffic infraction. He was having a conversation with her.
Well, I suspect Ms. Johnson would argue, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I suspect she would argue that, he admitted that the football game was his destination.
Correct.
Yeah, so he's going there. If he's got drugs in his pocket, and if his occupation or avocation or hobby is he's a drug dealer, then is it reasonable to infer that he intends to distribute those drugs at or near the football game or on school property?
There's nothing in the record indicating that that's the case.
No, but is that a reasonable inference that a fact finder could draw from the facts, assuming in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth?
I don't know that it's reasonable or not. That would be my argument, Judge, that it's not reasonable because of the statements that he made to the officer.
Let me circle back to at least one question I have about the other charge. Assuming for the purposes of my question that we're not persuaded that, or I'll flip it around, that we're persuaded that the evidence here clearly establishes that your client is in effect a drug dealer, and the circumstances, are such that he's, fleeing from the police. He stops his car. He runs into the woods, leaving two kids in the back seat of the car. By the way, we haven't mentioned that yet. And then he comes back, and he doesn't have the drugs on him. He's got the cash and the phone, but he doesn't have any drugs. But they find drugs, in the immediate area where he was, hidden from view. It's a reasonable inference, or we conclude that it's a reasonable inference for a fact finder to conclude that he's a drug dealer by avocation, would it be reasonable to then conclude that those drugs are beyond a reasonable doubt his, given the totality of these circumstances?
Well, the court has looked in the past to whether he had paraphernalia on him or in his vehicle, whether he had any baggies or other
paraphernalia
packaging, scales, and none of those were recovered from him or from his vehicle. So I would say, no to that question, Your Honor.
Okay.
You're heading into your rebuttal time. You got a little bit more left. Would you like to?
I'll reserve the remaining for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. I'm Victoria Johnson. I represent the Commonwealth.
Let's work from back to front on this case, Ms. Johnson.
Certainly.
Let's start with this idea that, okay, maybe the drugs were the defendant's. Okay, let's assume that for the sake of discussion. What evidence, though, does the Commonwealth have to suggest that there was an intent to distribute these narcotics on school property?
The defendant's own words that he was going to the football game.
Okay, but just going to the football game
with drugs, and
does that necessarily suggest that he means to sell the drugs at the school?
I think that it's sufficient evidence from which a reasonable fact finder could infer that to be the case. He told the officer that he was going to the school. He had $1,600 worth of drugs in his pocket.
I've been to many a high school football game. Because I officiate high school football.
He leaves his drugs at home.
I officiate many a high school football game, and I will tell you that I'm experienced enough to know what I smell when I go to a high school football game. And so am I to assume that everybody there who is doing whatever they do at high school football games these days is intending to sell drugs just because they're on school property and may have drugs on them?
No, Your Honor, but here, this was an amount inconsistent with personal use. It was $1,600 worth of heroin, and the defendant had that $859 separated by denomination in his pockets, ready to make change if necessary. So I suggest that those are all circumstances that show that he was going there to intend to distribute the drugs. Also,
Your
Honor,
is it part of the record, and again, help me out because I don't know this answer, is there any indication that heroin was being distributed at football games in this area? In other words, was there anything, police investigation or a sting or anything to suggest that drug distribution was occurring during football games in this area?
No, Your Honor, there's nothing in the record to that effect. I would also be remiss if I did not say that the appellant's brief that I have specifically raises the argument about evidence was insufficient to establish actual or constructive possession. I don't see an argument specifically about the sufficiency to prove just the intent to distribute on school grounds.
What about the assignment of error?
The assignment of error is broad enough, but there's no argument. The problem with this brief is that there's no argument, and that would be a failure under 5A20, not 5A12.
Well, from the standpoint of the law, though, it seems to me the Commonwealth has to distinguish Tolliver from the facts of this case. In Tolliver, we had a similar situation where somebody was fleeing from the police that happened to, get stopped on school property or within 1,000 feet of school property, which of course, is arguably within the zone where you get the enhanced penalty. And we held in that case that the mere fact that you were in possession on school property without any, you know, evidence that that's exactly that's where you intended to actually distribute the drugs was insufficient as a matter of law to support a conviction under that enhanced statute. And so I guess do I understand correctly that Commonwealth essentially relies on the only additional fact that Commonwealth relies on is that he said, I'm going to the football game, or I'm headed to the football game, or worse to that effect. And from that, we're supposed to conclude that it's reasonable to infer that, you know, somebody headed to a football game that has drugs in their pocket intends to sell them there.
My primary position, Your Honor, is that argument is not before this court because there is no argument in the brief to that effect. My secondary position is that not only did the defendant tell the officer with his own words, I'm headed to the football game, he also had that large quantity of drugs and a large quantity of money with which he was ready to make change. He was ready to sell. It was separated by denomination, which is a common practice of drug dealers. And for those reasons, Your Honor, I submit that there is adequate evidence in the record to prove that the defendant was going to distribute on the school grounds.
What's your best case in support of the on the school ground piece?
Your Honor, I did not address that on brief because it was not raised on the appellant's brief. And I only respond to
That's
the appellant's argument on brief. Also, there was no reply brief in this case. So while the assignment of error is broad enough, again, there's no argument on brief.
Would you like an opportunity to, through an additional briefing schedule, to address that issue? If we're
I would be happy to do that if that would help the court. Turning to the argument that was briefed, the possession with intent to distribute, the actual or constructive possession of the drugs themselves, I think my position is pretty clear based on my brief. The defendant had a large amount of...
What's the response to the your opponent's argument that that it's not a reasonable inference, at least not beyond a reasonable doubt, because football game, a lot of people around, don't know how long the drugs have been there, no fingerprints, no testimony about, there's dew on the ground, but the drugs are dry, indicating they've been recently discarded. We don't have any of that that we've seen in some other cases. So is it, it sounds like her argument is essentially it's too much of a leap to suggest that it's sufficient beyond a reasonable doubt to conclude that just because drugs were found in a general area where, he was absent from view for a few minutes, however long that was, that's sufficient to establish that he had actual dominion and control over those particular drugs.
I think that we look at the entire circumstances as a whole. Here we have an individual who was stopped for a speeding ticket, acted in a suspicious manner, tried to flee. He floored his accelerator while the officer had her hand on the car. She had to jump back to avoid being dragged. When he was stopped by a crossfire fence, he leapt out of the car and ran, abandoning his two young children in the back seat, who were sitting in the back seat crying. The officer did not lose sight of him until he reached the woods. He went into the woods briefly, circled back around, and at that point stopped fleeing, dropped to the ground, and complied with the officer's directions. I submit that taking all of those circumstances as a whole, it's plain on this record, and that a rational fact finder could find that the defendant, knowing that he had outstanding warrants, understood that he was about to be arrested and was determined to get rid of those drugs.
But the facts that you're suggesting would almost have us having an emotional response to the case as opposed to applying the actual elements to resolve the matter. In other words, we can all be sympathetic to the police officer almost got hurt during the confrontation. We can all be sympathetic to the fact that there were children in the car that were left unattended. We can all be sympathetic to the fact that the gentleman abandoned his children. We can all be sensitive to those issues. But still, setting those issues aside, which are emotional responses to what we need to do to resolve the case, the bottom line is the government still bears the responsibility of proving beyond a reasonable doubt, based upon the applicable standard on appeal, that this man possessed those drugs that were found on that property.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I disagree. That is not an emotional argument. On the contrary, these are the facts of the case that all indicate that he was in possession of the drugs and was determined to get rid of them and went to great extent to get rid of them, lest he be arrested with them and have them discovered on his person during a search incident to arrest. As the court pointed out in earlier argument, it is unusual for people without a serious motive to abandon drugs. These drugs were worth $1,600. We know from the record that this individual was engaged in drug dealing from the text messages, also the large amount of cash that he could not explain that where he got it.
Do you agree that there needs to be a temporal element associated with this kind of circumstantial evidence?
Yes, Your Honor, and I submit there is a temporal element. The officer saw him run into he was resisting, he was running away, he was fleeing.
The text messages.
Well, there were text messages that were received on the phone that were obviously used for drug dealing, because all of the messages on the drug dealing phone had to do with drug dealing, asking him where he was at that morning, and can I get in contact with you today? Are you going to meet me today? And those were all of that morning. He just hadn't gotten a chance to respond.
Just to be clear, the text messages were identified as that from that day, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And looking at the record, at the download from the cell phone, you can see that the date was, I believe, April 16th on those text messages. Now, there were earlier text messages that had exchanges. He hadn't gotten a chance to respond to the April 16th messages at that point. It's apparent from the record. And so while I understand that there are some sympathetic facts in this case as to the officer being almost injured, the children being in the back seat, I do not agree that these are emotional facts. I submit that these are facts that show that the defendant was in possession of the drugs and was determined to get rid of them. I further note that the drugs were not in any way covered over. They were just sitting on top of a pile of leaves in the woods in the area in which the defendant had fled. If the court has further questions, I will be happy to respond to them. Otherwise, I will rest on my brief, and I will await the court's directions as to any further briefing the court would like to hear.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let's deal first with the 5A20 concern raised by Ms. Johnson.
Yes, Your Honor. I did not argue in my brief, as she mentioned, the element of intent to distribute. I focused my argument on the possession because I think that this case hinges on the element of possession.
So you agree that it was not preserved?
I did not raise the issue of intent to distribute, Judge.
It was preserved, but it wasn't brief in adherence
correct.
With Rule 5A20.
Correct.
It was waived.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I do believe that this case does hinge on the possession element, and that's why I focused so much of my argument on that and in oral argument today. I did want to address some of the issues that were brought up, the text messaging in particular. There were text messages that were sent to the appellant on that date. However, the Commonwealth did just acknowledge that the appellant did not respond to any of those text messages. That phone was dead. If he had been intending to...
Well, he was not, inferentially, then he was not aware of the messages, but the messages were admitted into evidence. And
yes,
to
Your
the
Honor.
Extent that they are relevant to anything, it seems to me they show that customers regarded him as a source of a drug supply. Various drug supply, because there's various types of controlled substance mentioned in various messages. So, the question is again, it's standing alone, it's not dispositive of anything, but it's certainly a circumstance that, along with other circumstances, at some point, this is clearly a circumstantial case. And,
yes, Your Honor.
So the question is whether the circumstances remove every reasonable hypothesis consistent with innocence.
Yes, Your Honor. And because...
So what's the hypothesis consistent of innocence that naturally flows from this evidence and not from speculation?
Judge, what I would say is that he was on his way to a football game to be there with his children that day. He was not worried about his phone. He knew it was dead.
He just decided to abandon his children in the backseat of the car, run off into the woods for a couple minutes, come back, and coincidentally, there's $1,600 worth of heroin or cocaine, whatever it was in the...
Well, Judge, at first he was cooperative, but then when his information was run, when the officer came back to his vehicle, when she asked him to step out of the vehicle, that's when he must have realized that she knew he had these active warrants out for his arrest, and in order to try and avoid arrest, that's when he fled. That would be my hypothesis of innocence, Judge, is that he fled trying to avoid arrest.
And he fled to the one place where you could find a large quantity of drugs laying on the ground.
Perhaps, Judge, but he fled, and when he realized he didn't have anywhere to go, that's when he came back.
Maybe there's controlled substances lying all over the perimeter of this football field.
Well, Judge, no, but there were, you know, hundreds of people in at that football game that day. If you look at the pictures, the aerial photos of the parking lot, you can see 60 to 70 vehicles there. Assuming that no one, you know, that not everyone drove there by themselves, that means a fairly large amount of people were there at that game that day. And as Judge Alston mentioned, you know, even he has detected some, you know, smell of something going on when he's officiating at football games. It could have been someone else that was there at that game that day.
You make bad calls at those games all the time.
But counsel, you acknowledge that the case law is that people don't generally abandon things that are worth significant amounts of money.
I would agree with that, Your Honor, yes.
All right. Thank you for your presentation. We'll come down and brief counsel.
Thank you.